Okay, time being 6:02, I call to order the Franklin School Committee Subcommittee Policy. Present are myself, Anna Sullivan, Dave Callahan, Dave McNeil. Okay, and Tina's joining us a little bit later, but for now we're gonna just get started with. Oh, and it's also being recorded by Franklin Matters. All right, so first things first, just to approve policies, we don't have any tonight. Discussion of policies about to be sent to school committee, and that's on the agenda tonight, right? These are up for vote tonight?
Yeah, for the second reading.
Right, okay. So, in this instance, we've already voted to bring it to the full committee, right? So we don't really have anything to go over here. So we're in good shape. Okay.
Yeah. So we're currently at school committee and will be up tonight for the second reading.
Right.
So it's just on your agenda to say that those policies have continued through the process that will be in the second reading tonight.
Okay. Those are both policies. So, necessary, but not spicy. Okay. So section four, we have naming of facilities, which has been a hot topic in the community, so I definitely want to kind of go over the letter that we received from town council, first up on the agenda. So I don't know if everybody should be everyone's Dave, you guys have seen the letter, right? I don't think we need to read it. I just want to talk about, you know, obviously, I guess I'll let you all start if you have, you know, comments or questions or things that you want to. I know we have community members here tonight, so I think it's important that we just.
Mr. Sullivan, could I set just some context
Please,
for
yes.
the meeting, just to give us a sense? So just a backwards plan a few months ago.
Right.
This is Mr. Mercer's second visit to our meetings. You're the only person who returned twice, so thank you. So basically, a few months ago, we, as we had begun the reorganization, we obviously have seen the schools start to take shape in different form. As a result, it resulted in the consolidation of three middle schools under one roof and five elementaries under four roofs. As a result, there's some changes with some of the physical buildings, but also the makeup of those schools. When we registered with the Department of Education, we have a new middle school that's combining all of the data from three different middle schools across state testing, all of the longitudinal data to make a new middle school, which we named in that as Franklin Middle School. Mr. Mercer came to one of the meetings, but as you referenced in the community, the thought, there's a sentiment around wanting to do what we said we wanted to do from the beginning, which was honor the past while building the future. So as part of that, the discussion, the reason this is on your agenda tonight, is around the naming of facilities, but specifically around Horace Mann Middle School. At this point, from the letter it references, and wanting to look at how do you preserve that. I know that you mentioned we have citizens who you can engage in comment with, but certainly want to just set the context of the meeting and kind of the agenda item itself. Just with your policies, these policies are listed, they're in the packet, they're online. You do have two policies. One is around naming of facilities, and the second one is around memorials and commemorations. I'm happy to review those with you if needed, but ultimately I think that, just to get to the root of it, it's around the letter that you received from the school committee, and without reiterating every word, I do think it's worth noting that the town council put together a joint letter, which really was in support of saying, hey, we understand the naming of the facilities and the work and the extensive work that's gone into the reorganization, all the pieces, but they're hoping to see the name of Horace Mann elevated in recognition and a more visible presence for future generations and our current and past generations as well. With that said, it had to do with the idea of complexes, memorial complexes, and also talked about that the naming and keeping the Horace Mann name on the grounds for someone who was obviously a famous historical figure, had the largest impact on public education, and having that name continued through. So that just kind of sets the stage on some of the comments that were made, and I'll just kick it back to you on how you'd like to facilitate the discussion on this tonight.
And through the chair, if I may, too, I know at our last meeting as well, we kind of talked about those ideas, also talking about making sure, like Remington, who doesn't, because it kind of lost in the shuffle, but that I think that Tuesday, I mentioned that the following day it was going to go to the Historical Commission.
Yes.
And so Tom and I both actually went to the Historical Commission, kind of explained some of this as well, and also elicited a lot of feedback. They had mentioned Alan Earls from the Historical Commission were going to kind of speak about Horace Mann as well, kind of bring back some of that stuff. But stealing any thunder, one of the things that did come up was that, you know, this is something we move forward with, and I do love the idea of, you know, elevating Horace Mann, that it be done more so than just, it's a big thing. And that's where I love, like, in the town council's letter when you kind of spoke about, you know, reaching out to legislators to, you know, get signage, get plaques. Alan has personally committed to help raise money for a new statue.
I remember that.
Yeah, vividly, right?
That's a good idea.
But just more than just the idea of it's on paper and it's on like a website that this is the Horace Mann kind of, you know, campus or complex, but that there is a big to do about it. Again, without stealing any of his time, but it was something that was a takeaway I kind of got from that meeting.
Sure, I appreciate you going. Thanks. Yeah. I'd like to welcome the members who showed to speak up. You know, I know we read your letter, but if there's anything that you want to, you know, bring up while we're here in the meeting, sure.
Addressing me?
Absolutely, yeah.
I'll chime in. I'll probably defer to Jim Johnson,
sure.
One of your former history teachers who's got encyclopedic knowledge of Horace Mann. I would just put on sort of a marketing hat. That's one of the things I do in my life is I pay attention to marketing. What could be better for a school district than to attach its name to Horace Mann very legitimately? You know, there are challenges in getting taxpayers to want to spend more for the school system. Wrap it in the flag of Horace Mann for now and forever, and I'm pretty sure you'll have fewer problems. It should be a central source of civic pride that Horace Mann is our guy, and we're identifying this person, and he's shaped our past and is shaping our future. That's it for me in a nutshell. You know, I think it's hardly necessary to defend Horace Mann, but Jim could do a great job of it.
And I think we're all in agreement. I think that even before we got the letter, we were discussing how to keep Horace Mann alive in the school system. And Tom knows that I've been at school committee meeting or town council meetings for well before the first advocacy for the override, even just saying, guys, what are we doing here? We're Horace Mann birthplace. So. I personally am easily in favor of this. So, if Jim, you want to add anything for, you know, those that maybe don't get over to the historical?
Well, you know, there are some interesting people who have their names connected with the present middle school setup. And I had strong objections to Helen Keller ever having her name attached to a school in Franklin. And does anybody know why I might have that opinion?
I don't.
Perhaps because I didn't meet her personally, but I knew her very, very, very well. She was not a nice person. She was a eugenicist, for one thing. Eugenics was a very big thing with her. She thought that people that didn't measure up should probably be sterilized. And that was one of her core beliefs. And she was very much a person of her class and the maintenance of her class. And she was very, very conscious of that. She also, I mean, I don't hold a person's politics against them. God knows Alan's a very good friend of mine, and I don't hold his politics against him. But enough said on that subject. But sort of a private joke. That's a public joke. But anyway, getting back to what we're talking about here, she had some interesting swings in her political outlook. She embraced the core of two of the most anti-democratic forms of government in the 20th century. Her core beliefs were in the early 1900s were later shared by Adolf Hitler, who cited American eugenicists as his inspiration. And also, she lived in Wrentham with Annie Sullivan and her husband, a fellow named Chamberlain, who was a very, 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 very close friend of Jack Reed. Now, any of you know who Jack Reed is? Any of you ever see the movie Reds? It's about Jack Reed and his disillusionment with Lenin in early Soviet Russia. Now, when she was living with the Chamberlains in Wrentham, she had a red flag next to her bed. And she couldn't see it, but she knew it was there, and she wanted to be the first thing she touched in the morning and the last thing she touched at night. And she fantasized about the ruins of West Point someday and how people could go there and see the evil decay of capitalism. That was one part of her life, too. Helen Keller is not well understood by most people who are not historians, or social historians, for sure. Now, Lenny Remington was one of the greatest guys that ever trod the earth. He was a member of the school committee. He was the president of Thompson Press.
He was president of Thompson Press, and he was a 20-year chairman of the school committee.
That's right. 20 years. And after he got through with his school committee service, if you guys think that you're pressed and put upon, after he got through with his service as chairman, he served on umpteen building committees and rebuilding committees, and he gave half his time to this town and to all sorts of good works in this town. And to look at him, he was one of the most least assuming people in the world. And I remember when I first met him, probably in the mid-50s, he was the nicest person, the most approachable person. He didn't look that way, but he was one of the most approachable people. He was a very, very gentle man, and he was a wonderful, wonderful public servant, and he was a fabulous citizen. And at some point, a library should be named for him, a library complex, or some kind of a center of that sort, you know, within the Horace Mann complex, because he's worthy of remembrance.
Thank you, Jim.
Is there anything else you would like to know about any of these people? Any of their intimate details? Horace Mann, you know. I mean, Horace Mann was a great abolitionist. He was a strong advocate for Native American rights, for women's rights, all on a basis of total equality.
Right.
I mean, that's all you need to know about him, plus his advocacy for public education and the fact that he wanted teachers trained for their job and not just whoever could maintain discipline and off the street.
So that's where, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Dave and I both actually went to Framingham State, the first normal the teaching school.
That's right.
That was created over, I think, originally
1839.
The same year that MLB, baseball first game was played. Mm-hmm. But so I know I had some friends over in the Horace Mann dormitory, and I know that's we hear about that a lot at Framingham State.
Well, he was a great man, not only in this country, but in Western Europe and Japan.
Yeah, I think I think I'd like to maybe craft a letter back to Town Council, kind of giving some, feedback about our feelings in support of Horace Mann. And then we can, I think that the suggestions that were made were pretty straightforward and agreeable. I do tend to lean towards the word campus rather than complex, just because I think it's kind of sounds, that sounds like a little more educational to me.
Just quickly, just to piggyback on what Jim has said, what Alan has said, and obviously what was in the council's letter to the school committee or to the policy subcommittee. Again, the two names that are most important to me as an individual, Horace Mann and Leonard Remington. As much as I do kind of understand the reasoning behind it, we talked about that at length with the superintendent as well as Dave, so I get the reasoning behind feeling you need to change the names. But having, whether it's campus, complex, doesn't matter, I do like the idea of taking that whole Horace Mann, Pizzini Field, High School, and that whole area and making it the Horace Mann campus, and those other facilities are part of the Horace Mann campus. And I agree with Alan, marketing it and making a big splash when we do this, because we're continuing to get calls and emails from people that just get a piece here and a piece there and really aren't tuned into it. And I guess I came tonight for just to reiterate those things as well as to say, I think we need to get in front of this as quickly as possible so that it has no effect on our other tasks coming down the road.
Gotcha. Go ahead, Gavin.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm total support of the campus. It's better than middle school, so I guess even more. I mean, I've always I grew up here in Franklin, take great pride in Horace Mann. Part of the renaming, and we had to do what we had to do in the immediate term, but in the long term, I've been very supportive, and it's really the only name I've had a strong opinion about keeping. So this is even better than middle school, in my opinion, as we expand it out to a campus. So I'm very supportive of it.
Actually, real quick too, Superintendent. So if this is something maybe that like at policy, we kind of vote to say, we endorse like the Horace Mann campus kind of concept, that we can start building that out towards like on the next school committee meeting.
Yes, if you vote in support of this, I'll operationalize it and start to put a plan in place and coordinate with the people that I need to coordinate with. I was also going to say part of our plan with operations was we now have a secondary campus for the first time where it's all middle school and all high school are in the same location. So one of the initiatives that I thought is when you go to a campus, you know you're on a campus. You know how you know you're downtown in Franklin? The boulevard banners are all very consistent as you go in that area. One of the thoughts that we had was around our light poles, our fixtures, is having boulevard banners that designate that you're on the property. Mm-hmm. So like the boundaries and the areas. When you enter off of Panther Way, you get into the tennis court area, are there little banners? So I think this is something that we've talked about as a leadership team, but I think there's room there to look at where do we look at the high school banners, the middle school banners, but also the campus banners as you think about that property in general. I think that would add a welcoming environment. It would also identify that space as that location, and I think it can tie in with this idea of a memorial campus. So I think we can work together to come up with a plan, and then folks that are Alan or others that are interested to look at other mechanisms to commemorate. I think making a decision and being clear about a plan is probably the best thing we can do in the immediate, and then being really thoughtful about the idea of how you do this and when you do it, like commemorate those things. That would be my opinion, and I think there's a win-win here in many ways for our community. I think you've reflected, you've listened to some of the feedback. I will agree, Ruth Ann, some of these conversations were in play around how do we capture and honor the past, build the future has been like a mantra we've had with our leadership team, and mm-hmm. So I think this fits right within that chapter of that book.
And I know there was some dialogue around, like, if you close Annie Sullivan and you close, Remington and Jefferson, like, you don't want to put them in a building that's not theirs. It's like when roommates all move in together, two roommates move into one of the roommates' homes, they feel like they're in that roommate's home. So we wanted like a new brand, a new idea for the faculty and the kids. But I think we've vetted that out enough that, people as a whole are, I think, wrapping their arms around Horace Mann. I have had zero feedback about this not wanting to be the case. So I'm, yeah, fully on board with this. How are we going to work in the Remington name? Because I hear a lot about Remington and didn't have the, you know, fortune of getting to experience his presence, but I have certainly heard a lot about it. So,
well, within the, if I may, within the campus, I'm sure that you're going to have designated areas of importance. And I think one of those designated areas of importance certainly should be named for him. I mean, the whole campus is going to be the Horace Mann campus. Within the campus, you will have areas that you can use to honor other people. Certainly, and you and I are probably the only people here who knew him, and we knew him well, and he was a fabulous, fabulous human being who deserves to be honored.
Or even if you look at the Remington Jefferson facility, the Jefferson name just came from the street and the president back in the day.
If you looked
at the Remington Jefferson or the Washington, whatever you decide to name the school, that could be a Remington campus.
Right, right.
And the school is just part of, is on the Remington campus, which is kind of where the family saw this going. And I only say that because his son Paul and his niece Judy were both involved in when that school was named for their uncle, father and uncle. So just a thought, again, it was one of the original ones that I had brought up just because it is a different campus than the Horace Mann and high school facility.
And what are we calling right now? We're calling it Washington. What are we calling the 3-5 versus K to 2? We're calling them like upper lower. So upper Washington, lower Washington. So
K to 2, elementary.
So like maybe like upper Washington and lower Washington on the Remington campus.
Exactly. That was kind of what, again, my initial thought was because there was family involved when that facility was put in place. And again, the Keller Sullivan thing, that wasn't as important to me as a townie, as an individual and as a townie, as Horace Mann.
Can I ask a question? I'm just thinking about the campus thing at the time was thinking about the secondary campus. When you have one campus at, I'm wondering, is Lord Way significant? Is the word Lord someone's name?
It was, it was a guy that owned a piece of that property.
Okay.
Okay. Sure.
I just was curious. I was just wondering as well.
Yeah, it was a family that owned a little piece of not the major.
Gotcha.
It was just a small piece of that property.
Okay. Right. I was just thinking about the only way in to that complex is down Lord Way, and then both it was just
picked on the sign.
And
I think we can always give Miss Keller to Renfrew. That's where she lived.
We're not getting much of a request for that yet.
I think we can agree on that as well.
Again, those are the two most important.
Absolutely.
I would just interject, riffing off of what the superintendent said about properly naming this complex in some way that's memorable. I always think about the Zakim Bridge. I think we mentioned this earlier. It was originally the Bunker Hill Memorial Bridge or something, and then they decided to add Lenny Zakim's name because the mayor liked him. And Zakim's easier to say, so nobody knows it's actually called the Bunker Hill Zakim Bridge. So when you're dealing with something long like the Horace Mann Educational Complex, bear in mind that people may want to shorten that, and how can you make sure that the Horace Mann part stays there?
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
what that...
I like Horace Mann campus.
Yeah,
no,
maybe that's all it takes, but
yeah.
people tend to shorten and foreshorten, so
for
if
sure.
you can think about ways to make sure
yeah.
they remember the important part, that would be good.
Well, so, you know, in 81 years, I've never heard anybody shorten Horace Mann to anything.
Right.
He's always
yeah.
been Horace Mann.
Right. If I may.
Of course.
So I know, obviously, we have like the letter from the town council, which we're discussing specifically Horace Mann. I don't think anybody here on the policy subcommittee or else in the room wants to drop Remington either, but at least with Horace Mann, is that defined idea?
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's a potential of at least out of like policy, maybe like voting to approve for the superintendent and his team
okay.
to kind of like move forward with the Horace Mann campus.
I agree.
Idea.
Just give like
and
some information to the people at the town council
exactly.
meeting knowing.
But then maybe like
yeah.
as a second that we can then also kind of have kind of like even, you know, if we vote to say that we also want to either spin out like a new subcommittee or ad hoc or just a group
mm-hmm.
That looks at how to honor the past while building the future for Remington as well, just
yeah.
so that a way to at least, you know, from the minutes, you know, publicly, everybody kind of understands we're all on the same page as well.
Right, I agree.
Cool.
I love that idea. Yeah, and I kind of think maybe a campus theme could be a thing. I mean, we have three big campuses now, and we're adding a fourth essentially. Maybe that'll be Lucas G. Gear campus.
One more time.
But you've done 10 years of work in a couple, so.
People
so.
Couldn't spell it, so we'll just.
That's true. They're like, what are we, in East Boston?
Yeah.
What is this? All right, so like, if you want, I'm happy to entertain a motion to vote to bring this idea to full school committee to keep the Horace Mann name alive by calling our middle and high school and fields in that piece of property, the Horace Mann campus.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor? Roll call vote. McNeil?
Aye.
Callahan?
Yes.
And O'Sullivan? Yes. Okay.
Thank
so we can move that one forward at least.
All right.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. And then maybe we could also, we will continue the conversation as well,
oh, yeah.
just in terms
yeah.
of those other campuses or what.
Yeah, because there is a
that's the big
yeah.
one, right?
Right.
For sure.
And there's definitely like a handful of parents, as much as the parents just were like, just give me the name of a school, I don't care what it's called, like just tell us where my kid's going. I think there's also like a subgroup that's like, okay, now that we think they've got it under control and we're getting this done, it would have been fun to pick some names and talk about some names. So now we have, you know, maybe a third area to talk about. So
that's true.
That'll give some other stakeholders some skin in the game.
Absolutely.
Do some fun things over there. Okay. All right. Moving on then.
Sorry,
thank you for all coming.
Thank you.
So just procedurally, subcommittee
yes.
took a vote in support of this idea that will move to the full committee.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I'll start to get some of the, just the get prepped for some communication.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to, once the full committee has the opportunity, and if they do endorse this as a majority, you would then dispatch a letter back to town council
yeah,
to say, just as an update, and then also there'll be some communication you'll want to probably put that in one of our upcoming school committee meetings, I'm assuming. Is this a topic for next meeting as an update?
Yeah, I think this could.
I think it should be, just because I think that a lot of people
mm-hmm.
want to hear it, and I think that will
so
only help us kind of, you know, gain support for what we're trying to do.
So my suggestion tonight during policy subcommittee, the update, like the verbal update, you usually give an update of the contents. You can start to lay the seeds of like where you guys
okay.
have landed. Let the whole committee know they can expect to see something come before them.
Okay.
And then I'll say in new business that we're going to move this forward for, you know, that type of thing. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Just to be clear about steps.
Perfect. All right. Very good. So, okay. Moving on then.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
All right, so the next is the memorial commemorations. Oh, is that what we're just talking about?
I just wanted to get on the agenda, just because I know as we start to reorganize, mm-hmm. we're going from 10 schools down to 7.
Yeah.
Just that, you know, I know we'll have to kind of be mindful of what specifically, you know, has been gifted, donated for, you know, in memorandum.
As we're consolidating schools.
Yeah,
okay.
So I didn't know, and again, maybe this is something where if we do kind of have either like an ad hoc or just a few liaisons to kind of meet to discuss the other like kind
even
of campus ideas.
Even if you just compile a list of what those are. Like, you know, is it like auditorium names and things like that? Mm-hmm. Or?
Yeah, just make sure that, you know, we have a full list of everything that's out there and we kind of are aware of what's going on. And
so just to, your policy that you're referencing talks about memorials and commemorations, and it talks about that in keeping with the mission of the school department, recognizing deceased family, staff, students, alumni, and community members through donation to the Franklin Scholarships is encouraged. It goes on to talk about donations other than scholarships. They must contact the principal, however, and they would consult with me around any type of gift. But it's clear in your policy, just to be very clear, that the Franklin Public Schools does not commemorate deceased individuals in forms of assemblies, dedications, gardens, plantings, and walkways. So I think that over time has evolved. This policy is from 2015.
Okay.
So it's been for the last decade. I don't believe this was always the policy. I started here 20 years ago. But what I think we found, particularly when the old Franklin High had we had moved to the new Franklin High. It was a matter of there were people out, and it wasn't always the families either, but it was folks that were saying, can we take all of the memorial trees and stuff like that and bring them into the new facility? And the idea was the sentiment around the memorial tree was around the school that it was at for the last, you know, 30 years or whatever it was. And the idea was there was a decision made at that time to say, you know, we had gone through some tragedy in town at the same time, with some loss of some students that were young, and we had a whole group come in and talk about grief and how it's not linear, but cyclical as you revisit grief, and it can become a slippery slope, and many districts have a very similar policy around if it just turns into what they described as like a walk list, like a memorial, I don't want to say like a cemetery, but like a just multiple multiple reminders. There was just a caution around that, and that was the genesis of this particular blitz. So I just wanted to put that out there to you. I have received emails. I had a teacher reach out about a tree. I went. I actually drove there and inspected the tree. This is a full adult tree. Like it could not be transplanted.
Okay.
And there, she is completely fine. She just wanted someone to acknowledge and look and see what the deal was, but the idea was like a tree was planted, it's been 20 years now, you can't just like take that tree out and move it and put it somewhere else. It's not that simple, obviously. So that was part of it, just around how to do that.
Yeah.
There is some thought about some of the historical items that exist in some of the schools. If a school's closing and won't be available, the principal is planning to reach out to the historical commission around some of the pieces that are in there that have significant historical value. Mm-hmm. And I think we want to be sensitive to this around gathering things.
Right.
So just to put that out there as we move forward.
Okay.
And it's a sensitive subject.
Yeah, sure. And it can sort of be, you don't want to make it case by case if it's seamless versus if it's like a monstrosity to try to uplift a tree, because then it can be a slippery slope of who matters more. So
yes.
Okay, yeah, I guess if there's anything that's like pressing, you can let us know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this policy sounds like reasonable to keep in place as we do all of this redistricting, because,
I would just say people are reaching out. I am in communication with anyone who's inquired about anything. But I think what we want to do is, once again, as we start to get through this year and replace staff and whatnot, is start to look at the next layer of things, which is what do we do with items that have value to people, sentimental value to the community. This conversation is another example. We couldn't have this in November because we were trying to get some other things that were timely to get done.
Right.
But I think there's going to be a host of these types of things that need to occur over time.
Sure. Okay, any other discussion?
Yes. You know, the Franklin High School opened in 1868. I think if you memorialized everybody who ever taught in the town, ever attended any school in the town, that what you'd do is you would wind up with a catalog of the citizenry, period, which is also extant somewhere else. I think that if you wanted to set something up, it probably should be something online. There is something like that extant already, of which you may or may not be aware. I think you might be aware. And what it is, it's a list of all of the Franklin alumni of the high school who have passed on. I'm sure it's not definitive. I'm absolutely sure it's not definitive because it's voluntary. But I think that's where that sort of thing should be. I mean, if you are commemorating people who fell in a war, there is another place in this town where that is memorialized. And I know that Dean has memorialized its alumni in pretty much the same way. So I think that you run into a very dangerous place when you start to do that sort of thing. It's a question of how much room do you have for a forest?
Yeah.
You know, so I think perhaps if you support that thing that's online already, that probably would be more than adequate. Just a thought.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry.
Through the chair, thank you. That's actually a good comment because it doesn't take up physical space and it doesn't require us to move something that's not.
Right.
Or
some things are like, some things are like a tree or like a plaque, and other things are like, this family donated a bench, and that bench is useful because we can use it for a buddy bench with the elementary kids. So, you know, there's like a pragmatic.
Right.
Yeah.
Be careful, you may run out of buddies for your benches.
Never enough buddies. All right.
Transportation.
What's the update on transportation?
All right, so Colin's here, our transportation guru. He has worked really hard to continue to build out transportation, big yellow bus transportation for the district as we look at picking up kids at the same houses they're at, but bringing them to different locations next year. Colin has done some work. I've asked him to really start to investigate one of the areas of our transportation right now. It's the YMCA. So we have three after-school programs, three to four, that happen after school. Families, some of these programs have a bus, and they come and pick up their students at our schools, bring them back to their location of their program. The YMCA, we have a very good partnership with the Y, but we have been transporting students on our buses to the YMCA as a courtesy over time. So I've asked Colin to, with the new reorg and how we've organized ourselves with buses and sending buses across town to pick up kids to bring them to not five locations, but like, for example, not five elementary locations, but two elementary locations. It's just a different model, and it's created some challenges that we're trying to look at. So Colin has some data to share with you. We wanted to bring it up here because you have been heavily involved as a subcommittee with transportation and the decisions before we get to the subcommittee. The question on the table is, right now, supporting the Y from each of those schools and putting them on our buses. It's a longer ride. We do get them there. It's created a bit of a challenge for us to now fit them on our buses the way we are looking at running transportation, which we were able to optimize, as you know, from the transportation presentation two meetings ago. So what that said is around our courtesy of driving kids to the Y after school may come at a cost that we need to really be thoughtful around. So we're just putting out some preliminary information for you as we look to make decisions. Colin, you want to share some of the data?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we have five buses, one from each elementary school that goes to the YMCA. We have about 70 students right now between the five buildings that go. Each school is right now is currently able to fit the students who are going to Y on one bus at their school location. So when we're looking at the reorganization and we are going to increase the capacity of the elementary buses, it's harder to fit the split of the height. Now there's more students in one location and less seats open on each bus at the elementary level. So we, in order to maintain sending students to the Y, we'd either have to send more buses there from each site. We're estimating this could be anywhere from 6 to 10 buses because the percent of open seats on a bus, and combining students, there's not a lot of room to do that for that amount of students. So that may not be feasible for a variety of reasons. We noticed with these buses, there'd be more buses with longer routes now because they run their normal route and then go to the YMCA. So those students going to the Y have a very long bus ride. It creates an atmosphere for some behavior challenges, and now you're going to compound that in the number of buses that are going. The other option that we looked at to make this possible would be the consideration to add another bus, a designated Y bus. There's about 70 students right now. That kind of exceeds our ideal capacity for what we would choose for a capacity on a bus, but the exploration of even just adding one bus that potentially could start at one site, go to the other, and go to the Y would be we will also have a budgetary consideration as well by adding a bus.
And just to give you ballpark, one bus, a single tier, is $45,000 for the year. So it's about 81 if it's
so
two-tier?
Yeah, so this gets kind of gray, I guess, with how the contract is worded. So a tier one bus is a bus that typically just runs a high school or a middle school route run and then is done. A tier two bus is one that goes from the high school, middle school, and then goes to the elementary school. So this is an elementary bus. Historically, we haven't had any tier one elementary buses. So if this is going to be considered a tier two bus by the contract, it would be $81,000 to have that bus.
But the cost of the run would be a tier one run. So that's what we obviously, I would interpret it and fight that this is a tier one, but it's the contract is funny. So it's information. We're happy to answer questions, but just big picture, five elementary schools can each, if kids are spread out around five and you have one bus at each school that can fit a group of 70 kids total, that's manageable. But now at two locations with 70 kids, even if it was 35 and 35, do you see the challenge of that's basically half of a bus is already just taken in the Y. And it's not a requirement, just so you know, your rules are that you pick a kid up at their house and bring them to school and drop them off if they're over the 2 mile mark. So this is done as it's always been done as a courtesy. So, we don't want to, we have done for many years. It's just we're finding new challenges as we uncover these rocks and start to get into different aspects. So,
All right. Off the bat, it's awful to think that this is a courtesy because I know for a fact those kids going to the Y are the ones that need it the most sometimes. So, my gut is like, I have a real hard time voting against providing that. Having said that, I'm also the one who, pushed for a slightly higher override number because I knew things like this were going to come up. And
you don't have to vote today. You can share your opinion. I just wanted to know what you
said. This is a conundrum because, it's tough no matter what, but I don't know what the solution is. I know that we were saving, with this redistricting, it was very exciting because we were saving maybe two buses, one bus.
Two maps.
So that this is gonna wipe that out, essentially. I don't know what else to say.
So that was my question, because we're projecting that we might save two buses potentially once. So is there a possibility this could be revenue neutral?
It would be at our cost, just to be clear. So I didn't add the second part of that story is we met with the YMCA to discuss this face-to-face in person with them first before bringing it here. Yeah. And we explained the challenges. They made it clear that they are not either able or interested to get into the transportation business. We are required to, but we're not required to go there. So we have tried to engage them and just see, I do want to follow back up with them again to say, hey, have you thought more? I just know other programs like Elementary House, I believe at Adirondack Club, do they provide their own transportation as well?
There's two different bus that they go to do two different places. I don't know exactly what the names of them are, but if that's...
Yeah, I know elementary, and I'm thinking mm-hmm. around that. They provide their own bus, so the Y just doesn't provide their own bus at this point. And otherwise, they do. In Framingham and other YMCAs do have their own transportation. Franklin doesn't. So I just think we're in this discussion to try to think about, it would come at a cost to the district to do that. It's not. I agree with the service because Solutions fills up quick.
Yeah.
Child care fills up quick. Parents don't have options always after school. So I think there's a huge benefit to our community, and this would be 70 family, you know, approximately, that would be impacted. So I get the idea. I just wanted to lay out all the facts and keep you informed of where we're at as the policy subcommittee. This will eventually need resolution, and I'll bring it back before you. Ultimately, I want to just answer any questions I could now. If you have information I can't provide, I'll come back and follow up next meeting.
Got it.
Yes. I remember dropping my kids off at Kennedy, seeing the elementary mm-hmm. bus, and that's where I am hesitant that if it's going to cost us, you know, say if it's a tier one, $80,000, that mm-hmm. we're effectively subsidizing the YMCA, but not elementary, you know, house. Because I remember looking at like the fees of one place versus the other. Yeah. And so I do worry if it's a current situation where it is, you know, we can do it because we have the extra seats, and so it's not required an extra, any kind of budgetary impact. But if we do start to, now that we're filling up more of the buses, we kind of get into that situation, I do worry about, and I don't know if it opens ourselves up for any kind of vulnerability or issue if we're saying that we are providing free transportation to the Y so they don't have to buy buses and charge the family a higher rate, but we're not providing transportation to elementary house and they have to charge higher rates because they're providing their own transportation. I don't, that's just genuinely, I'm not sure, but I would worry about that.
How is the bus that drives through the senior center, does that go like every hour? Does that run all day, every day? I'm just wondering about
So
that.
You mean like an activity van or?
Yeah, I'm talking about.
We have an activity van as a school. I mean, it's yeah. used after school for athletics, so we don't rent for the golf team, for example.
Right.
We don't rent.
Let's think about the little town bus that we have that goes around. It runs at night too to take people to like the grocery store and stuff. Does anyone in the audience know?
As far as I'm concerned, we can check at senior center, but that's senior center hours and
it's depending upon the schedule and request.
That's also a smaller bus.
Yeah, doesn't have the capacity.
Yeah. I think the other one we see is Gatra, which is a different thing.
Right. So is it possible that we end up fitting the kids on the, like, do we not know for sure? Or those are just the two options? Either kids are going to sit on the bus for a really long time, or we're going to need another bus. And
those are the two likely options. I think there's a little bit of gray area where actual registration occurs. So I think based on what we're projecting, the number of riders, the increased rider, the higher percentage of riders on the bus, it just leaves less room to shuffle students around because of route has more kids on it, so you only fit so many more if you need to get them all in one place.
And the late buses this year, we have them at each school, or do the late buses go around to each school?
It's only the middle school.
Middle and high school.
Okay. This is a conundrum at the Horseman campus.
Yeah. So we will, unless you have other questions, we'll follow back up with the Y. To see kind of where they're at, because we left the meeting with this on the table.
Yeah.
And we can come back to this group.
Yeah.
And we haven't made any firm decisions yet, but ultimately I just wanted to put out there kind of what's happening as it relates to transportation.
And it sounds like you also are having a conversation about it being tier one based on just the time commitment. Yeah.
It's a tier one. And okay. it's unique that it's elementary because we typically
don't see
a tier one elementary, so.
Right.
But I don't anticipate that as being as much of an issue, but it is a consideration because you are correct. You're reading the fine print.
Yeah, and I think the only other thing is right now, while we are projecting a decrease in middle school buses, it doesn't leave another bus on tier one to become that tier two. So that would be about a 36,000, the difference between the tier one and the tier two. 36,000, we just don't have that.
Right.
High school or middle school bus to turn into a tier two.
Okay.
Thanks.
Awesome.
Yep.
All right, moving on. And I know it's getting late, so do you want to just, is there anything pressing that I should get to before we adjourn? I just don't want to be running upstairs.
I will say just that letter of support.
I have some information too. Yeah, so the, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
No, I was just saying the letter of support was for local access programming that we had had Pete from the Franklin TV come over. I only printed three of these, but these are the. This is a presentation that Steve Sherlock sent to me. So we were just going to add some stats to it, which we liked the letter that Dave wrote, and maybe next meeting we can approve it for the school committee to sign.
You want to do that?
Yeah, we can do it now, but we don't have it finished.
We got April break, so ups and downtime.
Like
it as written, with added stats.
I can approve it. I'm happy to approve it if you guys want to.
I'll have a cleaned up version for.
Yeah, I can entertain a motion to approve the letter that Dave wrote and trusting him to put some stats in.
One moment.
Go ahead, yes. Yeah.
Yes, I'll leave.
No, if we're doing a vote, I have to recuse myself.
Oh, you do? Okay, yeah, let's have a vote.
Yep, all right, perfect. So I'm going to recuse myself.
Yeah, Dave and Zombie John.
I made a cookie.
Cookie for you. Okay.
And so, if I may, just for clarification, the presentation I sent you was the copy of Pete Fasciano's presentation to the school committee, which he had not included to the school records. So now it's an officially part of the school records you have.
Thank you very much. Yes. And this is super helpful. So, all right. So I will entertain a motion. Can we do this and second it ourselves?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll I motion to approve the letter with adding in stats data from Pete's presentation.
Okay. I will second that. And those in favor, Callahan?
Yes.
And O'Sullivan? Yes.
All right.
Okay, Dave, you can come back in. Okay, so time being 6:53, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Sarah?
Right. Those in favor, McNeil?
Aye.
O'Sullivan? Aye. Callahan?
Yes.
Okay, meeting adjourned.
Wonderful. Hey,
thank you all so much for coming.
Motion.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts.